The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Laura Kovacs, and I'm honored to introduce our guest this evening. A contributing writer for the New York Times, Elaine Ciolino is acclaimed for her chronicles of French culture and history. She joined the Times in 1984 and has held several posts, including United Nations Bureau Chief, Culture Correspondent, Chief Diplomatic Correspondent, the first woman to hold that post, and Paris Bureau Chief. In 2010, she was decorated Chevalier of the Legion of Honor, the highest honor of the French state, for her special contribution to the friendship between France and the United States. She is one of the only American members of Femme Forum, a Paris-based private club of 200 of the leading women of France. Earlier this year, she became a member of the Advisory Board of Reporters Without Borders, the Paris-based international advocacy organization promoting freedom of information and freedom of the press. With her new book, The Seine, The River That Made Paris, she offers a guide to the world's most romantic river. A reviewer calls the book a soulful, transformative voyage along the body of water that defines the city of light. Please welcome Elaine Ciolino to the Free Library.
Okay, now what I have to know is, why don't people sit in the front row? This is like church, really and truly. I mean, they were reserved? Well, does anyone want to come up to the front? No, because you know what? You're in the back row. You're going to fall asleep. I'm worried about you, and I can't see if your eyes are open. So any of you want to come up to the front, fine. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to come out to you. Thank you, Laura Kovacs, and thank you, Andy Cahan, for inviting me here. It's the first time I've ever been at the Free Library, although I do know Philadelphia. My husband went to law school here. My daughter went to undergraduate school here. I know it very well because the one time when she was playing pickup soccer and she tore her ACL during exam week and didn't tell us and ended up in the emergency room on morphine and shooting Coumadin, it was a mother's nightmare until one of her friend's mothers sent an email to me saying, I think your daughter is in trouble you know how hard it is to get an MRI in Philadelphia on a Saturday? And anyway, that's when you use all the influence you have, and it's important. That's when who you know is important in Philadelphia. So I have lots of warm memories of Philadelphia emergency rooms. Oh, we've already moved to the first slide here magically because, you know, I'm using the handheld mic because I'm of Italian origin, and I move, and they always tell me when I use the fixed mic that nobody can hear me, so I'm kind of like Frank Sinatra coming out to you. So just bear with me. We're here tonight, to talk about a river, and not just any river, but the most romantic river in the world. I put up a map of this river, and I'm going to tell you about it, but how many of you have been to Paris? Oh my gosh. How many of you have not been to Paris? One? Okay, well, two. You have something in store for you. Okay, I promise all of you that by the end of this discussion, all of you will have learned at least one fact about Paris and France. So, may I start by just reading a paragraph from the book to kind of put us all in the Paris mood? The Seine encourages us to dream, to linger, to flirt, to fall in love, or to at least fantasize that falling in love is possible. The light bouncing off her banks and bridges at night can carry even the least imaginative of us into flights of fancy. No other river comes close. The Ganges, the Mississippi, and the Yangtze, they are muscular workhorses. The Danube It may be immortalized as the world's most recognizable waltz, but its history is one of warring nations. The Thames, who can name one famous lover who fell in love on its banks? So let's look at this river. It's almost 500 miles long, and it starts in deep Burgundy. Have any of you ever been to Burgundy? Great. Have any of you ever been to Burgundy for anything except the wine? Oh my gosh, look at this. But I bet you haven't been to the part of Burgundy where there's more cows than people, you know, kind of northeast of Dijon, because that's where the Seine starts. And it moves, meanders to Paris, and then all the way to the sea at La Havre and Honfleur. If it were a straight line, it would be half its length. And here are the source of the Seine, and it's source plural because when the Seine starts, it's not a river. It's tiny little springs that bubble up from the ground, and it's a man-made construction. It has to be channeled into a river, into a tiny, tiny little stream, and then it becomes a river. And this, did any of you see the article that I wrote on the bridges of Paris in the New York Times? You don't read the New York Times in Paris? I mean, yes, I know you've got the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it's a wonderful newspaper, and my close friend Trudy Rubin is the columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We've known each other. Yes, thank you. We've known each other since Beirut in 1982. We were roommates in Iran in the 1990s, and we're still close friends. She's a national treasure. Well, the New York Times is a good newspaper, too. It's as good as the Philadelphia Inquirer. And I did a story on the bridges of Paris, and there are 35 bridges in Paris, except this is the secret 36th bridge, because this is really the first bridge of Paris. And this is what the Seine looks like at its origin, where it's barely a stream. And now we see an artist's rendering of what was an ancient Gallo-Roman healing temple at the source of the Seine. And that sort of oval there that looks like a swimming pool is a healing basin dedicated to a goddess. And pilgrims would come from as far as the Mediterranean and what is now the English Channel to be cured. They would bring offerings to the goddess and drop them into the basin there. And if, for example, if a pilgrim had a leg ailment, he or she might bring an effigy, a carving of a leg, and throw it in. If there was an eye ailment, there might be a metal a rendering of eyes with the eyes cut out. 1,500 of these offerings sit in the Archaeological Museum of Dijon, and nobody ever goes into this museum, but it's one of the most magnificent testimonies to French history. Now, I said there was a goddess. Her name is Sequana, and this is the statue of Sequana that sits in the Archaeological Museum. It is the most extraordinary statue, and the curators at the museum call it their Mona Lisa. And I fell in love with this goddess, and while I was writing my book, I wanted to be inspired by her, so I went to the gift shop to get a little statuette of her. You know, like there's little statuettes of, you know, the Eiffel Tower and all sorts of other icons all through the museums of France. There's no gift shop in this museum because it's a tiny little poor museum in the middle of nowhere. There are no Sequana earrings or Sequana coffee mugs or Sequana keychains or Sequana bookmarks or Sequana t-shirts. There is nothing for Sequana in all of France. And so I think if you want to get in the ground floor of my fundraising, what do you call it, crowdfunding enterprise to make Sequana famous, you can just see me after the book signing, because she could be the most important female symbol of France. I fell so in love with this statue that when the cities of Paris, Rouen, and La Havre, which are the three biggest cities along the Seine, had a contest called Réinventer la Seine, or Reinvent the Seine, I put in a formal application. Because I thought we should build a statue of Sequana the same size as the Statue of Liberty that sits on an island in the Seine. Have any of you seen that Statue of Liberty? Yeah, you know, there's a I mean, you're like going west of Paris, and all of a sudden there's this one quarter replica of the Statue of Liberty in the middle of the Seine. And you think, why is there a Statue of Liberty and there's no Sequana? So I put together a pretty good argument for her. So let me just read you part of my argument. A pre-Christian healing goddess with no ties to any living religion, Sequana would fit nicely into the official French policy that reveres the Republican ideal. You know, in France, there is a religion. It's called secularism. And you cannot show ostensible signs of religion, for example, in public schools. You can't wear a hijab, a headscarf. You can't wear a yarmulke. You can't wear a big Christian cross because you're supposed to hide your religion in France. You don't talk about your religion at dinner parties in Paris. In fact, the French census doesn't even count race, religion, or ethnicity. So I thought, let's celebrate Sequana because she's pre-Christian. She's pagan, so she doesn't belong to any religion. Because I also said she could be the secular version of Joan of Arc, the warrior martyr, or of Our Lady of Lourdes, the miracle worker. She could be the idealized embodiment of freedom without the Republican weight of Marianne leading citizens to liberty. She's also a feminist goddess. Are there any feminists left in America? Raise your hands. Any feminists? Oh, my goodness gracious. I think there's more here than in New York City. This is great. I want to move to Philadelphia. In fact, I offered Andy, I said to him, did you see the movie The Intern? Did any of you see that movie with Robert De Niro? Yeah. Wasn't that a great movie? And I'm the same age as Robert De Niro was in that movie, and I love this library so much. I just feel at home here. So I've offered to become his intern, and he's graciously accepted. So, but just I haven't told my husband yet, Andy, that I'm yeah okay. It may be part time. Okay, January 1st, 7 a.m. or p.m. a.m. 7. Ooh la la. Okay, all right. Well, Sequana was a feminist goddess, and in the 18th century. A novelist named Jacques-Henri Bernardin de Saint-Pierre told her story, and this is what he said. He wrote the story about a Sequana playing in the waves near the sea and being approached by Neptune, the god of the sea, who came and fell madly in love with her and was going to grab her and take her off to the sea. I mean, this is the Gallo-Roman Me Too story. And this is what happened. When Neptune reached out his arms to seize her, her body melted into water. Her veil and green garments, which the winds blew before her, became emerald-colored waves. She was transformed into a river of that color, which still delights in wandering the places she loved. Sequana became the Seine. And the word Seine comes from the word Sequana. And that's why the Seine is considered a holy river. Now I know you're all dying to know, did I win or lose the contest? I lost. And in France, they don't give you a reason when they give you the rejection letters. They just say, Madame Chulino, thank you so much for your brilliant enterprise idea, blah, blah, blah. It was filled with so many great ideas, but it doesn't fit into our pattern, our rubric. Well, I wasn't going to take that explanation. I mean, I'm a good investigative reporter. I used to cover the CIA. So I found where the guy who was in charge of the whole program was having a reception, and I got myself invited. And I went in one night, and I said, Monsieur Misica, remember me? And he said, oh, the one with the statue project. I said, yeah, that's me. I said, why did I lose? And he said, Madame Chulino, you didn't have a business plan. You didn't tell us how you were going to pay for the statue. And I said, Monsieur Misica, I'm an American, and we don't have a problem raising money. Now, you're laughing. Some of you are laughing. But I told this story. I've been on a two-month book tour. Publishers don't send you on a book tour, so I organized my own because I wanted to come and share the joy of the Seine River with all of you, and I'm having a blast. I told this to a group in the Berkshires, and when I was signing books and selling them, you know, writing them, this woman came up to me, and she said, I don't have very much money. And I said, well, I'm sure you can get the book at your public library, ma'am. And she said, no, no, no. I mean, the Sequana Project. I don't have much money, but I'm in. So this is another possibility here. You know, a lovely Sequana Inc. You've heard it here first. You want to get in, you just, you know, come and see me. Okay. And there she is. I mean, isn't she gorgeous? Shouldn't she? We have a statue to her. And there's where the Statue of Liberty is, a quarter-sized replica of the Statue of Liberty just west of Paris. She looks so lonely. She would be delighted if she had Sequana next to her, no? Okay, let's see what we've got next. Let's look at Paris. Look at the Seine as it moves towards Paris. This is the mighty Seine. It's a tiny, tiny little trickle as it moves towards Paris. And here is the Seine River in front of a champagne domain. How many of you have been to Champagne Country? Oh my gosh, this is an amazing group. I bet all of you have been to Champagne Country at Épernay and Reims, with the fancy domain in the north. Isn't that right? Have any of you gone to the Aube in the south? Oh my goodness. This is the first time in 50 events that someone's actually gone to the Aube. So you know a whole different kind of champagne, isn't it true? I mean, the Aube region only gained the status of real champagne in 1927. And it's the kind of place where they treat you like real people there, isn't it right? I mean, they welcome you, and you can come in your blue jeans. You don't have to wear the linen pants and jacket and the fancy Italian shoes to be let in the front gate, you know, the big chateau. It's a wonderful, wonderful possibility for more tourism. See these three people right here. They can help you with this. And here is Monsieur Fleury. He's a fourth generation champagne maker. And he does all that airy fairy stuff with the Steiner method and the moon and the, you know, natural wines. And so I thought I'd mention that because we're in Philadelphia and you're into all that kind of stuff. And he and his wife own a gîte near their champagne domain. Does anybody know what a gîte is? It's a vacation rental, like a farm vacation rental. Okay, that's close enough. So the two of you are the first winners of my frame-ready illustrated map of the Seine. Okay, there you go. Give them a hand. Okay, yeah. It's kind of like a country. It's like a country vacation rental where they have one kitchen and one bathroom for 25 people. And at his domain and at his gîte, the gîte sits right on the Seine River. And that's where I went swimming in the Seine. Because the water there is so pure and so clean that you can see the bottom perfectly. And it was less than 60 degrees, which isn't bad because I grew up in Buffalo. I mean, when we went swimming in Lake Erie, you could almost see the ice cracking on the surface. But because it was less than 60 degrees, the Washington Post, when it did the review of my book, called me a badass, which I took as a great compliment. I mean, I've been called a pain in the, but never a bad. So I'm delighted. I'm on cloud nine. Here's the Seine as it's moving towards Paris. And just look at the mirror-like image. It's almost as if the river isn't moving. And I love this photograph for two reasons. First of all, my younger daughter, Gabriella, took the photograph. And second, it shows the contrast from the river as it starts to get civilized and concretized with a concrete berge or bank on the right, but on the left it still looks like a pre-impressionist painting. And now, who knows what this is? Yes, sir. The coat of arms in Paris. We have another winner here. Okay, I need some help. The coat of arms of Paris. Now, this is a harder question. Look at this. A boat sitting on the river. That is the coat of arms of Paris, because there never would have been a Paris created on the Ile de la Cité if it hadn't been for the Seine. And underneath is the motto of the city of Paris, Fluctuat nec mergitur. Anybody study Latin and know what that means? Who knows what that means? Raise a hand if you know what that means. Let me see. It has to be someone else. Sorry, you can't win twice. No, this is not like Jeopardy. Sorry. Here, wait. Here, wait. Yes. Tossed about but does not sink. Yes, she is tossed by the waves but does not sink. Okay, another winner. Did you know the answer to that question? You knew? All right, I guess I have to give one to you too. All right, yeah. I mean, we want to... Do I have enough? Well, if I run out, we'll have to stop the contest. Or else, you know, I'll take your address and mail them to you. Yeah, I'm running out because I gave away too many last night. Now, this emblem is found all over Paris. It's found on the different mairies or city halls of the different arrondissements. You'll see it on the sides of bridges, even on the sides of park benches, in a couple of the metro stations. You'll even see it throughout French design. Did any of you read my book on the only street in Paris, on the Rue des Martyrs? Okay, we've got a few who know that book. Well, there's a chapter on nightlife, and one of the things that was created on the Rue des Martyrs is the first modern striptease. Do you remember, did any of you see the second season of the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, where they're in Paris? Well, that red nightclub, that's on the Rue des Martyrs, and it was the nightclub just next door to it where they created the world's first striptease. Now, I'm not going to submit you to a full striptease, so I'll just do a partial striptease and rip off my scarf so that you can see the seal of the city of Paris in various on my vintage Hermes scarf. I don't give this away. My husband gave it to me. Okay. And this motto, Fluctuat nec mergitur, she is tossed by the waves that does not sink, is so powerful that when France was attacked, when Paris was attacked on November 13th, 2015 by terrorists, 130 people died. You know, the terrorists struck the Bataclan concert hall, the Stade de France, the stadium, bars and bistros in right close to where I live in Paris. The city decided to celebrate Paris by using this as the motto. She is tossed by the waves, but does not sink. And that motto carried the spirit of Paris and carried people forward. In my neighborhood, for example, the next morning, the attacks happened on a Friday night. The next morning, everybody was open for business because the only way to fight terrorism is to continue your daily life as normal. This is the Paris River Police, or the Brigade Fluviale. I went out with them, and they go pretty fast. They go like 50 miles an hour. It is really cool. You know what it's like? It's like the French version of Miami Vice. Remember that old TV? And they actually, they've seen Miami Vice because they've done Miami Vice in Paris, and they can even tell you dialogue from Miami Vice. And they all want to be Don Johnson and wear a linen jacket and T-shirts and backless shoes and carry an alligator, and they all want to have Jaguars. So they're very cool. And so next time you see them out on the river, just really appreciate what they do. They do everything from something as trite as liberate a boater from a net or the muck at the bottom of the river, or talk someone out of committing suicide. So they're part of the fabric of the city. The Lovelocks, remember the Lovelocks on the bridges? Thank the Lord, most of them are gone. This was on the Pont des Arts, which is a pedestrian bridge. The bridge started falling down into the Seine, and the city decided to resolve it by cutting the bridge off and then auctioning pieces off. So a little bit of money was made for the city. My daughter Gabriella took this photograph too. So let's talk about some of the things that happen on the river. And since we're in a library, I decided we'd start by celebrating books, because you can buy books on the Seine. You know, the bouquinistes, they're still there. They're trying to get UNESCO cultural heritage status. There's fewer than there used to be, and a lot of them sell a lot of those trinkets, although none of them sell Sequana statuettes, but maybe someday. I just want to read a tiny bit of some of the things you can do on the river in Paris. Life is lived on the river, on barges, pleasure craft, pontoon platforms, decommissioned naval vessels. Afloat on the Seine, you can live, eat and drink, make love, get married, practice yoga, run a business, shop for books, watch fireworks, do a wine tasting, go fishing, dance the tango. You can attend a fashion show, a concert, a play. You can find a hotel, a psychiatric hospital ward, a film studio, a homeless shelter, an architect's showroom, all floating on the river. So let's look at some of the things you can do. Okay, this is the people of Paris think they're on the French Riviera. They're on the Seine. Dancing salsa. I mean, wouldn't you love to go dancing? And they even give you free salsa lessons. Any fishermen or fisherwomen in this group? Ah, okay, we've got a few. You can buy a one-day permit and go fishing on the Seine in Paris. And in 1990, there were only 4 species of fish in the entire river because it was so dirty. And now there's about 33, including some Atlantic salmon. You can row in 100-year-old rowboats. This is a crazy association west of Paris called the Sequana Association. And they restore and exhibit old boats, just as happened in over a century ago when Caillebotte, the painter, and de Maupassant, the writer, had their own boats. You have to wear those funny shirts if you go out and visit them, though. And you can swim in the Seine. When Anne Hidalgo, the mayor of Paris, was trying to seduce the Olympic Committee to choose Paris as the site of the 2024 Olympics, she spent millions of euros to bring in Olympic athletes to show their stuff. She constructed a 12-meter diving board on the Alexander III Bridge. Many of you may recognize this bridge. And she sent the divers diving into the Seine. And, you know, again, since I'm a good reporter, I waited for this guy when he came up. And I said, so what was it like down there? And he said, well, it was kind of dark and I kind of hit the muck at the bottom. But I think if I have a 20-minute really hot shower, I will survive. And now the Seine is all about romance, right? Romance on the River. You've seen all those movies, Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn in Charade, Leslie Caron and Gene Kelly in An American in Paris. And what movie is this? La La Land. You know, here, Ryan Gosling and, what's her name? Emma Stone. They're in California, right? And then all of a sudden, the scene changes, and they're dancing along the Seine in Paris. I mean, isn't it true? I mean, what are they doing? And you know why? Because doesn't everybody want to go dancing along the Seine in Paris? Because of romance. But I have a friend who said to me, Elaine, if you really want to sell your book, you're going to have to write a chapter about sex. And this is going to wake up the two of you in the back row who are, yeah, because you mentioned S-E-X, and everybody wakes up. But the Seine isn't really a river of sex. I mean, first of all, where would you have sex? Are you going to go under the bridges? It's kind of like damp and dirty and sometimes even smelly under the bridges. There was a census that was done of Paris, and it was determined there are 2 million human inhabitants of Paris and 4 million little ratatouilles running around Paris. So you might not want to go there. But again, because I'm an investigative reporter, I worked really hard to write a chapter about sex. And I discovered that in 2013, there was, as part of an all-night, they call it Nuit Blanche, artistic performance exhibition. Maybe some of you have been in Paris in October when they do the Nuit Blanche. There was a Chinese fireworks artist who did a performance called One Night Stand. Now, isn't this the best fantasy in the whole world, having a one-night stand on the Seine in Paris? Now, I hope you forgive me. It's not, I'm trying to make it not X-rated, sort of like R+, but it's enough to keep people awake. So I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs about one-night stand. One-night stand opened on the river at midnight with loudspeakers broadcasting the sounds of sex. Heavy breathing, gasping, and moaning. The mayor was there, by the way. Then came rhythmic drumming and a monkey's mating call. Next, fireworks shot into the air. The act lasted 12 minutes, estimated to be the length of time the average French couple needs to climax. Now, I was at one of my talks when I read this sentence, a woman shot her upper hand. And I said, no, can you wait with your questions afterwards, ma'am? And she said, no, I have to ask this right now. I said, okay, what's the question? She said, did it take 12 minutes with the wife or the mistress? I had to say I did not research it that deeply. Okay. Then, that's a true story, it really is. Then the artist transformed a Bateau Mouche tourist boat into a love boat. 50 couples from around the world had sex inside see-through red tents. The couples could turn off the lights to copulate privately or turn them on to reveal their bodies in motion. After sex, they could share their bliss with the crowd. They could press a button to send signals to small boats nearby. The boat operators would then send a 50-second spurt of bright white fireworks into the air. And there you've got one night stand. All right, this is serious now. 1910 Paris, the Seine overflows, and the only way to get around the city is by boat. 2016, the river overflows, and one of the only ways to get around this part of Paris is by boat. Now, continuing our contest, does anyone know who was the painter who painted this? Not Chagall. Albert Marquet. Okay, all right, I'll make it easier now. Who knows what bridge this is? Pont-Neuf. Who said Pont-Neuf? You got it. The Pont-Neuf, and behind it is La Samaritaine, which is going to open up. It's the old department store that was filled with asbestos and all sorts of problems, and is going to open up as a hotel and shops and museum and all sorts of things next year. All right, now the next painting is very easy, but you have to tell me, the painter, it's very easy, but you have to tell me who painted this. Oh, you have to tell me who painted this? Renoir. Okay, we all know Renoir. The name of it? Who said Luncheon at the Boating Party first? Who claims it first? And this is what I've been giving out, which is this wonderful illustrated map of Paris that was done for me. And there's Sequana in her boat on the left-hand corner, done by an American named Carol Gillot. And she did a similar map for my last book on the Rue des Martyrs. And she's just fabulous, lives in Paris, and does these maps of all sorts of streets in Paris. I told you that there would be a lot of surprises, or at least one surprise for each of you. This is a small replica of the boat that Verrazano sailed to the New World. He changes his name to Verrazan, even though, you know, from Italian to French. We will never forgive him for that, but we like that he discovered New York City, even though Hudson got the name of the river. And in 1524, he sets off with four sailing ships. One of them makes it to the New World, and this is a group in Rouen, the city west of Paris, about 75 miles west of Paris, where they are trying to rebuild the replica. I mean, there are other fun facts about America on the Seine. Robert Fulton. We all know Robert Fulton, right? Steamboat, right? Did you know that Robert Fulton invented the world's first submarine, and he submerged it for 7 minutes in the Seine River? Robert LaSalle set sail as well from the Seine on Rouen. And it was funny because when I went there, and everybody was talking to me about, oh, Hélène, as an American, you must adore René Robert Cavalier Sieur de LaSalle. And I said, No, I never heard of the guy. And then it was only when I saw a plaque, and it actually said the name LaSalle, that I thought, oh my God, there's a park named after him in my hometown of Buffalo, New York. I love it. Now we're moving farther west. This is a phenomenon called a tidal bore. It's called the Mascaret. It's a photograph from about a century ago. It was such an extraordinary phenomenon that it became a tourist attraction. And when the railroad was built, people came from Paris to go and see it. Now they've dredged the river and widened the river and dammed the river so that it has disappeared. But I wanted to show it to you so you could see the contrast between the river here compared to the river when it looks like a flat and silent mirror. And here, I mean, some of you may have gone to Normandy and the beaches of Normandy, the D-Day beaches, but this is a southern Normandy, and I love always finding little elements of France that I've never discovered before. This is a 13th century windmill that was built by the monks at the Abbey of Jubiège. And I went and visited one day, and I was the only person around it. In fact, I was the only living being around it, except for hundreds of birds that were flying around. But I braved, you know, I'm a former war correspondent, and I braved the birds to go inside, and there was a little caretaker. And I said to him, I'd love to go up top, but there's all these birds. I said, did you ever see the birds? And he goes, And I said, Les Oiseaux? No, I said, Alfred Hitchcock? And he said, but if you don't come down in 15 minutes, I'll come looking for you. And then we're moving to the end of the Seine, the Pont de Normandie. This is the last bridge on the Seine. Remember you saw the first bridge on the Seine when it was just this tiny little stream? Here it is so wide that this bridge from the beginning on land at Honfleur all the way to the end in Le Havre is as long as the Champs-Élysées. I want to end by talking a bit about Notre Dame. My book had been finished and printed when fire broke out in Notre Dame last April 15th. I was in New York that day, and that night my husband called me and he said, Elaine, I'm watching French television and I see a boat on the Seine in front of Notre Dame, and I think it's a fireboat. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I might have to find out whether the Seine played a role in putting out the fire. And what I discovered is that the infrastructure on the Ile de la Cité, where Notre Dame sits, is so weak that there wasn't enough volume of water or enough water pressure to put out the fire of this magnitude. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? The book is printed. It's already been sent out to reviewers, to scholars, to critique, to fact check. In that situation, you can do one of three things. You can throw yourself out the window, or in this case, throw yourself into the Seine. You can take to your bed and eat bonbons and drink a lot of red wine and just pretend. What, you like that one? A lot of bonbons and red wine are good. Good, don't talk, just pretend it didn't happen. Or you can do what, there's Gretchen Toner is here tonight, and her late sister Robin Toner was one of my best friends and was one of those maniacal New York Times reporters, you know, who had to like write the real story while everybody's having all the fun at the National Democratic Convention. She's the one which puts a curtain around her to just type. And I thought, what would Robin do? Well, what would Robin do? She'd write a new chapter. So I called my editor and I said, I got to write another chapter about this. And what I discovered was that one boat played a crucial role in putting out the fire. The firefighters, who are not part of the French police, they're part of the French military, had a fireboat, a tank of a boat, in the Marne River, which it sent through all those curves that you saw early on in the map, through a lock. Any of you ever been in a lock? You know how long it takes to get through a lock? I mean, these guys were probably saying, yeah, hurry up, we gotta get through this lock. It finally comes, moors in front of the Notre Dame on the Seine, and this is what happens. And this is how I end my book. The powerful motors of the Ile-de-France fireboat furiously pumped water from the depths of the river. By the time the fire was extinguished hours later, the Brigade Sapeurs-Pompiers de Paris, the city's firefighting force, estimated that half the water used in the operation had come from the Seine. General Jean-Claude Gallet, commander of the Sapeurs-Pompiers, said to me, "We had before us two elements of nature, fire and water. The fire had the face of a demon with a mind of its own. Then right in front of us, we had the Seine. It was as if the Seine were human. It all sounds a bit mystical, but the water of the Seine saved Notre Dame. His spokesman called it a miracle. I grew up Catholic, and I would never dare to contradict those who believe that God answered their prayers in saving Notre Dame. But I have also come to believe in the spiritual as well as the physical power of the Seine. Even before ancient Romans conquered Gaul, its source had been the site of a temple and a place of pilgrimage dedicated to a healing goddess. Notre Dame will be rebuilt, different perhaps, but with its place in French life and its symbolic meaning for the world intact. It will be reborn as a place of music, ritual, and prayer for believers, and a museum for the masses. The holy waters of the river that once bore the name Sequana saved the greatest cathedral in the world. I want to believe that the spirit of the goddess herself lives on. Thank you very much. You know, I just have to tell you that this is my last event that I'm doing on this nationwide tour, and it's had its highs and its lows. You know, like they got the time wrong in Florida, and only 11 people showed up at the. But I got a massage in Miami Beach, so it was okay. But this has been the best reception of any of my events, and so I really have to thank you from the bottom of my heart. So thank you. So, anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
You haven't told us why the French decided to put Paris in this particular location on the Seine. Was it a military purpose? Was it a commercial purpose or whatever?
So basically, if Paris was founded on the island, the Ile de la Cité, for a number of reasons. First, it was a survival purpose, which is that it was on an island, so there was water, and they could use it to raise crops. And Julius Caesar wrote about how wonderful the summers were on Lutetia, that they even had a fine wine. But it also was able to be military protected because you could build a wall around it, and then it became a way of transit and traffic as well. So this little island suddenly became the kernel, and then Paris spread out on both sides.
What's the French title of your book?
Oh, what a great question. There isn't a French title for the book yet because we haven't been sold the French rights yet. I just yesterday sold Italian rights for the book, so there's going to be an Italian version in my native tongue. I'm hoping there will be a French version. My last two books were translated into French, but any of you who know France well know that sometimes it is hard for the French to accept that a foreigner, particularly an Anglophone, can tell the French something about their country that they don't know. So I come with real humility, and I am hoping that there will be you'll be the first to know.
I wondered, in your research, what was it that surprised you about the Seine as you were looking at this story?
There wasn't one surprise. There were many surprises. I mean, the greatest surprise was to go to the source of the Seine and to just find a lot of mushy ground and no river. I mean, that was quite amazing. And to see the remnants of what had been a Gallo-Roman temple that has not really been excavated. And you just say to yourself, oh my gosh, I wish I had a gazillion dollars so I could just send in an archaeological team to recreate this, and then we could, you know, have a gift shop right there with a nice statue of Sequana. And I mean, they have like this 19th century nymph is this ugly statue that isn't no way is Sequana, and that could be my next project after I get Sequana in Paris.
I'm wondering if you have a favorite personal memory of the Seine that you'd be willing to share.
I do. It's a very, very personal story of survival. Do I have a personal memory of the Seine? The Seine saved me early in my life. I'm going to have to, when I went through a very hard time as a very young journalist, and I'm going to have, oops,
I'm going to have to read you the two opening paragraphs of the book, and you will see what the Seine River means to me. In the spring of 1978, I was seduced by a river. I had come to Paris from Chicago to be a foreign correspondent for Newsweek magazine. I arrived with no sources, no lovers, no family, no friends, no mission except to start fresh in a city all the world loves. It's sad, but then it gets happy, so you can laugh if you'd like, okay? There had been a husband in Chicago, but he'd announced one day that he was leaving. I let him take the BMW, the butcher block table, the full-sized mattress, the Wassily armchairs, the walnut roll-top desk, the darkroom equipment, and a set of Wedgwood china. I kept the antique brass bed frame, a carpet, and much of the rest of the furniture. 4 months later, he remarried. I recounted the story of our breakup over and over until it became as smooth and harmless as a stone worn down by the sea. I was 28 years old and free to be my own person in Paris. And every day I walked home from this fancy office on the Faubourg Saint-Honoré, in the 8th arrondissement, home to the 7th arrondissement near the Eiffel Tower, across the Pont de l'Alma, and I stood on that bridge and I looked out at the river and the sun setting behind the Eiffel Tower, and I said to myself, it's going to be okay. And you know what? It was okay. And a few years later, I sat down next to this guy, or this guy sat down next to me on the Long Island Railroad going to the Hamptons, and we're married 35 years later. So you see, there's a happy ending.
Is there anything special about that?
The food along the way. Well, the Seine really waters about a quarter of the landmass of France, so it's part of the irrigation of all the crops and farmland. But I have to confess that there's not one particular foodstuff that is identifiable with the Seine. But if you have a lot of money and you want to do something really cool and gastronomically special, have lunch on Alain Ducasse's restaurant boat on the Seine, and you have this extraordinary meal. They have the kitchen right there, and it goes up and down the river, and you just say to yourself, I am so glad I just spent, you know, like half a week's salary having this extraordinary experience treating my wife to the best anniversary of our lives. So that's the best thing I can say about food in the Seine.
You entered the contest and you didn't win. I was
yes.
wondering who won and did they follow
through? No, that's
a
really good question. I'm glad you asked that question. All of these commercial projects that are going to make a lot of money for the cities. They were supposed to have this artistic component to it, and with the exception of this one boat, it's called Fluctuart, that's on the Seine in Paris, which is kind of like a floating museum. Most of them are very commercial, profit-making enterprises. Yes, so there's still hope for Sequana later on. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.